violent content. Parental discretion is advised.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks for joining us for the 24th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm host Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. Also tonight, we have the privilege of hosting Morris Small. Morris Small is a SAG-AFTRA actor, fight choreographer, writer, and voiceover artist from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. He has been acting for over 20 years as featured support and lead roles in television, film, and industrial projects. Cartoons and animation have always captured his attention and has persuaded him to become a voiceover artist. Morris has a passion for action movies and martial arts, stemming from his early childhood. He has been utilizing his experience with martial arts and professional training to become a fight choreographer. In addition, he also writes, directs, and produces his own projects. We look forward to Morris's insights into the acting process when it comes to portraying mentally ill characters. Thanks for joining us, Morris. We will be taking calls from our listeners at about 11:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are solely those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro and do not imply an official stance on behalf of the psychological community, nor its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thanks for that, Doc, and would you kindly let our listeners know what song that was and its relevance to tonight's topic?
Sure. Any good metalhead will know that to be the opening riff to Paranoid by Black Sabbath, which is also the title of their second recording. So I thought, given the title of that and the content of the song, it would be kind of apropos for tonight's discussion.
Absolutely. And as you've mentioned, tonight's episode is entitled Pathology Chic and Misconceptions. It is about how our entertainment, media, and pop culture all romanticize, fetishize, and misinterpret several pathologies. We will discuss some iconic fictional characters and their ostensible mental illnesses, as well as explain the true nature of these conditions so that our listeners will know how these pathologies work in real life. We hope to give our listeners a more accurate understanding of these conditions, both fictionally and in everyday life. We will be splitting this topic into two episodes. We'll take calls from our listeners at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at 914-338-0314, just a reminder, and we will take questions in the chat room all evening. Please feel free to join us. Dr. Mathis, do you have any commentary on tonight's topic before we get into the details? Dr. Mathis?
Oh, sorry. I turned my mic off. yeah, we're good. Thank you for asking.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So tonight's episode is influenced very heavily by a well-peer-regarded Belgian study done in 2013, Psychopathy in the Cinema, Fact or Fiction. This was published in the Journal of Forensic Sciences in 2013 by Samuel J. Leistet, MD, PhD, and Paul Linkowski, MD, PhD. And I also picked this study up originally from the article, quote, "The Most and Least Realistic Movie Psychopaths Ever" by Erica Engelhaupt. This was published on January 14, 2014, and that was in sciencenews.org. Please note that the diagnoses of characters in Belgian researchers Leistet and Linkowski study are based on classifications outlined by forensic psychologist Hugh Carvede and by psychiatrist Benjamin Cartman. Okay, we will present tonight's topic in three sections, and we'll be doing part of that later on. The first section is a list of various diagnoses and movies in which they are portrayed. The second is the same diagnoses and notes about societal misconceptions, not fictional ones, but out in pop culture, and our stereotypes about them, some of which may feed the Hollywood habit of catering to them instead of to facts. Third and lastly, we will again cover the same diagnosis factually and explain how they really work. We're going to split the show into two episodes to fully cover this, so tonight's show will be just section one. And on July 12th, please come back and join us, and we'll cover sections two and three. All right, so I would like to begin with quotes from some well-known actors who have portrayed iconic mentally disturbed characters. We do not often think about the extra rigor that playing a pathology can put on an entertainer or actor. The first snip is about Olivia de Havilland. She was nominated for Best Actress for her work in 1948's movie The Snake Pit. She eagerly researched a role for months, visiting several asylums, watching ECT be performed, and other treatments, and sitting in on therapy sessions when she was allowed to. Her marvelous and believable performance as a schizophrenic woman showed that all the research paid off. The film was exceedingly bold for its time. It took a subject that was a taboo and made it into a damning indictment of how awful psychiatric hospitals are and the abuse of patients by staff. This was back in the 40s, of course. This film led to reform of many asylums. The second quote is from an interview with Glenn Close. When Glenn Close finally secured the part of Alex Forrest, and this was in Fatal Attraction, one of the first things she did was to take the script to two different psychiatrists. She asked them, "Is this behavior possible? And if it is, why?" The two psychiatrists who reviewed the script at Glenn Close's request both came to the same conclusion. Alex Forrest's behavior was in its own way classic behavior. Their diagnosis was that Alex had been molested and sexually tortured for an extended period of time when she was a child. As a result, she would naturally lash out at anyone who found her desirable. In a 2013 interview with CBS News, Glenn Close admitted that she would have rethought her portrayal of Alex Forrest because of her fear that the film's popularity may have been a contributing factor towards mental health stigma. Quote, "I would read that script totally differently," Close said. And continue, quote, "The astounding thing was that in my research for Fatal Attraction, I talked to two psychiatrists. Never did a mental disorder come up. Never did the possibility of that come up. That, of course, would be the first thing I would think of now." And I am going to switch over and let Morris talk for a while because he has portrayed a couple of characters that had mental illnesses. So, Morris, if you would, can you talk about those characters and what you had to go through in order to portray them? I know the OCD project did not complete, but I know you did do some work on that. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Well, the OCD character, that was a short film. There was a horror film. And I figured just to gain some type of interest when we were writing it to actually implement and put in some different type of characters. One of the characters was really religious, very soft-spoken, somewhat of an introvert. The boss was a CEO. He was a rare collector. He was kind of a millionaire. My character that I came up with was the OCD gentleman. This particular gentleman was somewhat functionable, meaning a lot of what I discovered, a lot of the people that have OCD tend not, they can't go out in certain environments. This guy was able to work, but he found a way to deal with his issue along with his workload. So the majority of the film and my character, even though it was a short film, you would see as soon as my character comes on, I would say, okay, there's something wrong. You can clearly see how we had it set up, that his workplace was clean. He was totally in the character. It was interesting. It was interesting to do the research because I knew people that spoke of it, but when I actually went and did the actual research for it, it was very interesting. I found it very interesting. I said, okay, that's something different. I looked up some people just to see how they did. I looked at some, you know, some videos and stuff just to get more of a ground basis of it, not assumptions, you know, so I could stay true to the character. So as it came off, when we were filming it before it got canceled, I mean, everybody was like, well, what was wrong? Because you really got into character. I said, yeah, most definitely. I mean, because it's a little more than just cleaning up. It's a lot more that they go through. People think they just clean up and stay neat. It's a little more in depth than that. And that's what I did not know about that type of character to play.
Got it. Did you have an opportunity to speak to any mental health professionals about OCD?
No, I actually looked up some papers that I found online and looked at, you know, like diagnosis and treatments and stuff like that, along with the videos, and that's pretty much it. Now, the other character, the war veteran, that was a little easier because I actually knew, which was also a short drama film based on the stories and trials of Freddie Gray in Baltimore. So he basically was work, but at times you can kind of see where he's really stoned. I mean, he's really just out of sync. So I made some other developments. We're speaking to some of the war veterans that I did. Now, luckily, I knew them, and I didn't have to watch so much video because I knew people. But the ones that I met and interviewed, they were on medication. You kind of couldn't see too much, but it would explain how much they would say a lot of PTSD and everything. Like, you said, look, if I wasn't taking my meds, I would not be able to come to work. I'd be in the VA hospital. You know, they explained factors like that that were involved, and I had to just took bits and pieces of what they were saying and tried to implement it into the character. I was not to focus so much on that, but to illustrate and just let everybody know that, okay, he was in the war. I can see it physically. I can see where you can kind of he's kind of spilling off somewhere else when people are talking to him. So it was fun. Sometimes not so much with the OCD character, but with the last character I played, the war veteran, I can actually see. I would do the walk sometimes when I go to work, and I'll do a glitch real quick. So sometimes it'll stay with you because I was really into that character. I like both of them because I've never done either one before. So this is all new to me and challenging.
What do you think
well.
Was probably the biggest surprise about your research into these conditions and stuff, like you weren't expecting to find?
They're heavily medicated, a lot more than I would have assumed. A lot of them, you know, because at my job, I work with a handful of them, and they're calm. But once it seems like when it's time for them to go to the VA, I start to see little things they talk about. They do tend to blank out, depending on which ones they are. They tend to just, it's like everybody's against them. It's like everything's enclosed. Everything is dark, and what am I doing here? Where are my brothers at? My arms? And I'm like, oh, wow, this is very interesting and kind of scary at the same time. So, I mean, they wouldn't flick off, but you can kind of see little flashes of what it could be if they weren't medicated. And I did not know they were medicated like that. And they had to pay so many visits to the VA. But thank goodness they had the VAs out for the veterans and those type of situations. Because they look normal. You couldn't tell some of them. They do stuff to try not to think about it. And they don't take their meds. And then you have the ones that have to take it because they will start to show a bit of that war side. And it's not really good.
Wow. Is there anything else that you want to add about that process of trying to play somebody who has, you know, a distinct pathology like that, you know, maybe procedures or advice, or if you had to do it over, you know, anything like that?
If I had to do it over again, I would actually go to a hospital, and I want to feel it more. Talking to people, seeing them, that kind of helps, and doing the research that really helps an actor, but I want to be embodied with the character a lot more. I mean, I literally want to breathe like this person. And I tried to come as close as possible as I did with this last one. But next time I will say I would like to go visit and get definitely more in depth with the character. You know, if I had to spend more than days and weeks ahead of time to do it before shooting, then I would do so, or months. But it was a short film, so I had to get real quick and talk to some people and just sit down with them and had to make sure that they were okay talking about it, because some of them, they weren't. They were receptive.
Yeah.
But it kind of puts them in that memory talking and bringing it up. So I had to watch that as well.
Yeah, that's understandable. So you're more of a fan of the Oliva de Havilland method of, you know, spending weeks in that environment and really absorbing the day-to-day of what that is.
Correct, yeah. I would definitely
very method actor, very Stanislavski. And I'm a big fan of that. You know, when I do acting, I like to do the immersive thing just because there are little subtle things about their mannerisms or their reactions. And if you just do a small set of instructions, you miss so much that is lush about the character, and that makes them not cardboard, not static, you know?
Right. And I don't want to cheat the audience and the people that, you know, explain their stories to me. So I owe big time to both sides in that sense.
Absolutely. Okay, fantastic. Anything else you want to cover right now? And then after we're done with that, we'll go on to section one. You pretty much good?
I don't have anything else right now.
Okay, fantastic. Let me check in. Dr. Mathis, how about you? Is there anything else you want to add before we get into section one?
No, I'm good. That's really great that you went to all that trouble. That's really what it takes, is to see it in action, because you can read all the papers you want, but talking to folks with the disorder. It's a whole nother ball.
Because you can see it more. I mean, it was like I said, it was more in depth, and some stuff.
It's more
they,
real.
You know, they go, it is. And you look at it, I'm like, oh, my God. And you can see him. You can see a tremble, not a fear, but of that side coming out. And I would see a lot. I'm like, okay, you okay? And they're like, yeah, let me just get myself together. I'm like, yeah, because this is not something normal to just walk up to somebody and ask them to relive something traumatic like that. So.
Okay. With that, gentlemen, I'm going to go ahead and move on to section one, as I mentioned earlier. And what we're going to talk about in this section is I have a list of pathologies that I'm going to cover in every section equally. And this part is famous Hollywood portrayals of mental illness grouped by pathology. Now, this is not a complete list, but rather a representative list. While I was doing the list, there are actually hundreds of films going on, so I had to trim it down, and even then it is a little crunchy. Some of these films I have not personally seen, or if I found no diagnostic commentary on their accuracy, I'm not going to speculate on it myself. I'm not really qualified. One caveat before I read the list. These characters may or may not actually exhibit clinically correct behaviors for the pathologies named, which is what this show is about. They are listed as such only because the film claimed that they represent that diagnosis. No formal diagnosis is even possible, given that these are fictional characters who could never be evaluated by a professional. They are layperson's guesses, mostly by people potentially subject to societal stereotypes, which we will discuss later on next time in section two. So what I will do is name the pathology in question, and then I'm going to give you some example characters. If I have any notes or commentary about the accuracy, I'll share those with you guys at all. Dr. Mathis, if you want to opine on any of these sections, that's fine. We will discuss these again in sections two and three, so it's kind of your discretion.
Okay, so I was about to ask you, did you want me to comment on any of these when you get finished with each one or not?
If you would like to, that's fine. If there's a character you're familiar with and you want to give an opinion on your idea whether they're accurate, that would be interesting, because some of these I could not find opinions for. Basically, the psychosis one I had tons of opinions for, because that was the study that started this show, and they evaluated 400 movies. So... notes are huge. And some of these other ones were not analyzed online very much, you know, or they were done by student papers or something. So, if you want to opine on your accuracy, if you know any of the characters, feel free. I'll go ahead and pause between each one, and we can go to that if you like.
Okay, so great. Thank you.
The first pathology is ADHD, also known as ADD. And I will mention this again later. ADD is not really used anymore. ADHD is used for as a blanket for the whole thing, and then they break it down into different subcategories. So
yep.
These are characters that have been suggested are ADHD in different movies. Jerry Maguire, Nick Falzone in Pushing 10, Aaron Brockovich in Aaron Brockovich, and Adrian Cronauer in Good Morning Vietnam, and possibly almost all of Robin Williams' characters. Other suggestions may include Maria Von Trapp from The Sound of Music or Tony Stark from Iron Man 3 specifically. Let's go to Dr. Mathis and see if you want to comment on any of these.
Of all those, the only one I've seen recently is the Iron Man movies, and I would not label him as ADHD at all. Personality disorder,
you know,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get
and
to
this
that
is
later,
part of what we're poking at tonight is that Hollywood
right.
has an idea of what it looks
yeah.
like, and pop culture through our stereotypes, we have an idea of what we're expecting as an audience. But
right.
that's not always true, and that is the heart of the lesson for this episode.
And if I may quickly add, it's also
mm-hmm.
what often confuses folks who come in to me, because recently I had someone come in and was displaying what appeared to me to be pretty clear indicators of ADHD, and this person had no flipping clue, because this person had a vision of other people whom this person knew hadn't been diagnosed ADHD. And they were almost your classic, you know, Beavis on a sugar rush. Are you threatening me? And
the great cornholio.
Yeah, and I had this to kind of go, well, that's one kind. That's sort of the stereotypic, you know, poster mm-hmm. child. But let me tell you about the different stuff, and let me tell you about the various accompanying things that ADHD could be. And after I described all this stuff to this individual, the person stopped and went, oh, yeah. I actually may have that. I just started laughing, going, yeah, no kidding. But, you know, for a layperson, I mean, for me, it's like obvious because, as you know, that's like 85% of my caseload. So I can
yeah.
spot this crap a mile away. But it was interesting, this after I described it, it's like, oh, well, that's not at all what I thought ADHD was. I'm like, yeah, I know, and you and most of the rest of the population doesn't know. And that's
they
partly
know.
Because of things like this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And that's what we're gesturing at a lot this evening. So we'll go
yep.
through. Each one's going to have this sort of thing where some of them are good portrayals and some of them are stereotypes.
Absolutely.
So the next pathology that we want to get to is Asperger's and autism. I have separated these deliberately, and we'll talk about why in Section 3. They've been treated separately in the past. I know they've been merged. We'll get to that later. So this is a list of characters that were posited could represent either autism or Asperger's or something related in that spectrum. Carla Tate in The Other Sister, Forrest Gump in Forrest Gump, Arnie Grape in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. There was a note that technically Arnie may have, quote, a developmental disability. They did not really specify what. And Raymond Babbitt in Rain Man, who also was an autistic savant and also had OCD. So I'll check in with Dr. Mathis and see what we want to do with this one.
Okay. Well, as you know, I think I probably mentioned this, Asperger no longer exists, much to my chagrin. And so all of these have been combined into this, what's called an autism spectrum disorder. They all belong to a group of disorders known as pervasive developmental delay disorders. So ergo, the developmental disability note on
mm-hmm.
Gilbert Grape. And
got
I can
it.
Tell you that one and the Rain Man are both fabulous. The What's Eating Gilbert Grape, that is like an awesome portrayal. That was the first time I'd ever seen Leonardo DiCaprio. And if I hadn't known better, I'd been going, oh my God. I mean, that is, in my personal opinion, his best role ever. And certainly Dustin Hoffman's portrayal is really, really good also in Rain Man. And so is Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm.
Forrest Gump also has a, you know, subnormal IQ, so there's some borderline intellectual stuff going on there. So, but yeah,
gotcha.
Carla Tate I've never seen, and the other sister, I've never seen that movie, so I can't comment.
Okay. But it's your opinion that Gilbert Grape and Rain Man are actually pretty good presentations of the spectrum and so
forth. Oh, yeah.
Far.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Absolutely.
Excellent.
The other one I would talk about is a more recent film called The Accountant. Ben Affleck's character, fabulous portrayal.
Oh, I did hear about that, but I was unfamiliar with it, so I didn't bring it up because I wasn't really sure how that fit.
Yeah.
It was interesting because many, many websites, even from psychiatrists and psychologists, disagreed vehemently on what counts
and
what doesn't
count. Oh, no, I thought he did a fabulous job. No, I thought he did
Excellent.
A fabulous job. But,
good
you know,
to know,
I'm weird, so what do I know?
No. But it's good. You know, if our listeners are looking for media that portray certain pathologies, you know, we are going to sit and pick and analyze which ones are accurate and which ones are trash or in between.
Right.
Okay, so the next one we want to cover is bipolar disorder, which was previously known as manic depression. And again, we will get to the why of that later, but these are some rules that are posited to represent it. And a couple of these I have not seen, so I'm taking other people's evaluation for this one. Joseph Hawthorne in The Ghost and the Whale from 2016. Carla and Marco, these are two separate characters, in Touched with Fire, 2015. Angel Sanchez in Repentance in 2013. Pat Solitano in Silver Linings Playbook in 2012. There's a lot of controversy on how accurate this is. It's kind of love it or hate it. So these are the ones I have for bipolar disorder, and I will go to Dr. Mathis on that one.
Having seen none of the aforementioned pictures, I have no commentary. I can tell you quickly why they changed the title from manic depression to bipolar if you're interested.
I am interested. We will cover it next episode, but certainly let's go ahead and get that on the table, and then we can get into the details next time.
Okay. Well, it's real simple. Manic depression is not, quote unquote, definitive enough, because when people look at bipolar, there's like six different kinds of bipolar disorder. And the short version is they define which phase of the disorder you're in, whether you're in the manic-y phase or the depression phase, and therefore two ends of a pole, right? Bipolar, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're either in the hyper slash manic phase or you're in the depressive phase, and then there's variations, degrees of those two and combinations, and that's why they went to bipolar and the four or five or six different kinds of bipolar. So it more defines what state you're in at the moment, which to some degree drives psychopharmacological interventions as well as treatment. So that's why they did it.
Excellent. I feel better because that does actually corroborate with the notes I've got for later. So, yay.
There you go.
That's happy. Okay. And now coming up is one of our favorites we like to talk about on this show, borderline personality disorder, or BPD. Jaws theme.
Yeah, really.
So here's a couple of characters. There were not a lot of characters that people felt were a really good representation, and one of the ones that I ended up dropping out was actually satirical. So it's hard to say if it was very good or not because it was a dark comedy. But let's see what we got here. Susanna, who was Angelina Jolie's character in Girl Interrupted from 1999, it has been posited that that's an inaccurate BPD portrayal. She was suicidal, and Lisa was closer. Susanna was Winona Ryder's character. Lisa was Angelina's character, but she was more APD than BPD.
Evie Zamora and disorder.
Yeah. Yes, correct. Okay. Evie Zamora in 13 has been heralded as far more accurate portrayal than Girl Interrupted was, but I haven't seen it, so I can't really comment on there. It's basically a buddy picture where a girl gets mixed up with a girl who's BPD as their new best friend, and they sink into this giant hole of drama. So I have seen Girl Interrupted, but I don't have a professional opinion on it. I don't know if you have seen either of these movies and you want to weigh in.
No, but I can tell you some that you've obfuscated, which are just blaring BPDs. Glenn Close's character, for example. That's like BPD out the you know what. A lesser.
This is good to know because I'm going to get to that later under another pathology. So we'll definitely come back.
That's
to
why
that.
I'm mentioning. That's why I'm mentioning mm-hmm. it now because it much more yes. closely fits under BPD. Which is often a result of PTSD if it goes untreated. We'll get to that later. Also, Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind.
Oh,
yeah. The chick in Silverstone, Alicia Silverstone's character in The Crush. The character of the woman who's in quote-unquote in love with Clint Eastwood. I think it's Jessica, and I forget her last name.
Oh, Misty for me.
Yes. Yes, exactly so. Right.
Okay.
Those are great borderline roles. Just fabulous.
This
and
is good
the
to
other
know,
one
because I did not have a lot of commentary on these online.
The other one is the one where the girl tries to rent the apartment, a single white female.
Oh, yes. I love that movie.
So all of those are really good borderline portrayals. Different types of borderlines, but all very good borderline portrayals. And
yes.
What's her name? Mommy Dearest.
Oh, yes. Joan Crawford.
Yeah. Fabulous portrayal of a borderline.
Also good to know because I do mention her elsewhere as well. Although I think I may have mentioned that we're not sure of the category she was put in, that she may actually be BPD. So
yeah. When
I get to her, we can talk about that some more. Yeah. Yeah. Some of these are multiple things or they're in a category as they were publicized, but it's not accurate. So, you know, it's fair to do double labels or, you know, move them around. That's all fine and well. That's what we're here to talk about.
And also that a lot of folks, you know, folks don't just have one pathology. You know, co-occurring comorbidity, dual diagnosis, however you want to say it, is much more the rule than the exception, particularly with personality disorders and particularly with the cluster Bs, the borderlines, the antisocials, the narcissists. Not as much with the histrionics. But with those, you are definitely looking at polymorbidity here. You are not just looking at one disorder. So that might be the other issue, right, of confusion.
Yeah. And please feel free to bring these up when you catch them because, you know, I certainly just have a layman's opinion. So
no, I got it.
We'll be
very
interested. Okay, so the next one we're going to talk about is dissociative identity disorder, DID. You guys may know it formally as multiple personality disorder, MPD, or split personalities. There was a recent movie called Split. That is definitely questionable as far as its accuracy. I can't remember when it came out. It was in the last couple of years. I want to say 2015, 2016. I haven't seen it.
It's interesting.
Oh, have you actually seen it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
How do you feel about its accuracy? Because most of the notes I found were disparaging, to be honest.
It's close. Some aspects of it are dead on, and some aspects of it are a little flaky. But I mean, I think in general, Hollywood version, it's a good Hollywood version. I would not disparage it. Yeah,
this is good to know.
Yeah, what's his name? He's a really good because I'm used to seeing him in the X-Men movies, so it was real interesting seeing him portray somebody like that. It was very interesting. Which I think speaks a lot to the characters,
I actually have it in here twice. The character's name is Kevin originally, and he has 22 additional personalities, and is a burgeoning with the 24th, and then it was 2016.
Yeah.
So I don't need to go through that twice, so we've already covered him. The next one is Sybil in Sybil, 1973. This was a true story, but portrayed somewhat inaccurately. Now, I wasn't clear if they meant for the pathology or for her story. I wasn't clear on that.
Story. Yeah, the pathology is pretty accurate, although some things were left out. The story was it was Hollywoodized.
Of course, yeah.
You know, and I'm not slamming it. I'm just saying, you know, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's numerous movies. In fact, probably well over half are going to be like that. And that's why we're poking
absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely.
So the next one is Three Faces of Eve, 1957. And I don't know if you remember Dr. Mathis, but I have brought up before. This is a true story of Chris Costner Sizemore. She lived in our area when I was growing up. And one of her children went to my high school. And so as such, she would come to a psychology class that we had as an elective, and every year she would give a lecture about her experiences. And she actually didn't come out until quite a while after the movie originally aired. So we knew who Eve was for years.
Oh, wow.
In the 70s before she was outed. And my understanding from her lectures and from notes online is that portrayal was accurate but dated as far as the movie goes. And when it came out in 57, obviously mental health has made a lot of changes and strides since then.
Right.
And so some of the portrayals in there, I don't know that they're inaccurate as much as they were a product of their time. You know, what was known and treated, you know, during the 50s.
Right.
Very different.
Right. Right.
So that was kind of interesting to talk to her. Next one is Trina Gavin, otherwise known as Jade, in Jade 2003. That is inaccurate and somewhat, it was kind of like the 9.5 weeks of mental health. The only way I can describe it. It had a woman who's a well-known and vetted psychiatrist who had a secret life where it was implied this was a different personality for her. And she was, I'm not clear, she wasn't a hooker, but she was just like promiscuous and a little basic instinct-y. You know, we're not really sure what was going on with her. So then we have Kevin, we already talked about. Right. Tyler Durden, or the narrator, in Fight Club, 1996. There was unclear commentary how accurate that was. Norman Bates in Psycho, 1960, I have been told is very inaccurate and dramatized. And then Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde from 1931 is considered the classic presentation. And that was also very hollowed-eyed and inaccurate. So if you want to jump in and talk about any of these, feel free.
Yeah, Norman Bates is much more schizophrenic.
Oh, good.
No, that character, as well as the character of Buffalo Bill, in the Hannibal series, Silence of the Lambs, right, as well as the Chainsaw Massacre movies, they were actually taken from a real deal schizophrenic slash guy, Ed Gein, back in the day.
Yeah, he was the influence for several movies on this list in different parts.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
They both the crib from him quite a bit. In fact, somebody did a biopic of him even, but I left that out because it was biography, not fiction. So.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And so, okay, so if we're done with DID, let's go into the next one. Narcissistic Personality Disorder, NPD. Now, the examples here are weird and kind of all over the place. Captain Jack Sparrow from Pirates of the Caribbean, who was also said to have APD and hallucinations. So he may have some other schizo things going on there. Gregory Anton in Gaslight, 1944, you know, which is from where we talked about on another episode where we get the term gaslighting. He was the husband who was doing it. The accuracy is debatable. He may also have been APD.
Yeah, I think
Ingrid
that's much
Magnuson,
closer.
Yeah. Ingrid Magnuson and White Oleander, 2002, pardon me. Aurora Greenway with Shirley MacLaine in Terms of Endearment from 83. Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada, 2006. That was Meryl Streep's character.
Right.
And Zaphod Beeblebrox in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, 2005. So, Dr. Mathis, let's opine about this. How accurate do you think we are?
I can't say about The Devil Wears Prada because I've never seen that movie. Or White Oleander or Hitchhiker's Guide. Gaslighting, I think, is much more antisocial. And Jack Sparrow is probably more... He's kind of an interesting, for me, he's an interesting mix of cluster Bs. He doesn't really fall under one or the other. He has kind of a combination of several. And if I had to pick one, I would say closer to the antisocial than I would the narcissist.
Okay, that's fair. All right, any of the other movies you want to comment on before we go to the next one? Are we pretty good? Okay.
We're good.
The next pathology we are covering... And this was interesting for me because you and I, Dr. Mathis, have talked about this on our own time. And I didn't ever quite get what the point you were making was until I did research for this, and now it finally clicks. And, you know, that may be me. Obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD, and obsessive compulsive personality disorder, OCPD. And these are two different things.
Two very different disorders. Yeah.
Yes, and we will get into that in detail in section 3 on the next episode, but they are definitely different things, kind of loosely related, but only loosely. Mm-hmm. And in go ahead.
I would say they're first cousins of each other, so to speak, in that they're both based out of some irrational fear happening, mm-hmm. but the OCD people are a whole lot more biochemically irregular, shall we say, than the OCPD people. And as I've mentioned to you many times, I have OCPD and like it.
Yes.
oops, did I say that? It's much more manageable.
That was your out loud voice, sir.
yeah, really. That was my other skitsy voice. The OCPD is much more manageable without meds. OCD, not so much.
God,
but
yeah.
Anyway, we can get to that later. Sure.
Yes. And thankfully, again, these match the notes that I have for you guys next time. So I'm glad to see that my research was accurate. So I have a list of characters. I did not differentiate between OCD and OCPD. And to some extent, I haven't seen all of them, so I'm not sure of the difference. But this is my list. Joan Crawford in Mommy Dearest, 1981. This is debatable accuracy. OCD with a cleanliness obsession, possibly also BPD, narcissist, and paranoid.
Yeah, well, she's such a borderline that a lot of borderline have qualities of both histrionics and narcissist and paranoid personality disorder. There's also a difference between paranoia and paranoid personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So big
difference.
Which
do you think was probably closer for her? Was do you think she was paranoid or disorder? Okay.
No, I think she's borderline because most borderlines have a paranoid personality disorder aspect about them.
Okay. And that's kind of a function of the BPD more than
anything?
The BPD,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Fantastic. And then we have Melvin Udall in As Good As It Gets. That was Jack Nicholson. And Linda Hunt, 97.
Yeah, that is full-blown OCD.
Oh, good. Okay. Howard Hughes, which is a biopic in The Aviator, 2004. And as we all know, that was, as a biopic, was based on his life. So Hughes was actually famous for his OCD outside of the movies.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes. And Roy Waller in Matchsticks Men, 2003. I did not see that, but commentary was that he was OCD and also agoraphobic. But I'm not familiar with the show, so I can't really comment.
Yeah, me either. Yeah, I can't either. I've never seen it.
Fair enough. Anything else we want to do on OCD or OCPD before we go on to the next one?
Now we can go into more detail when we get to part two. The saga continues.
Yes, it does. And, you know, as a reminder for our listeners, we're going over the characters tonight, and then in 2 weeks we're going to go over some of the stereotypes and the misconceptions. And then at the end, we're going to tell you how these pathologies really work, what the truth is, and break the stereotypes for you guys. So the next one we have, and this will be something that pertains to Morris in his work earlier, post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. The characters listed I have are John Rambo in First Blood, 82. And this one was fascinating to me. I love this movie, and I had never realized it before I did this research. Jacob Singer in Jacob's Ladder from 1990. I adore that movie, and I didn't put two
it's
and two together.
PTSD. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, definitely.
And then,
definitely.
And then Second Lieutenant Dan Taylor in Forrest Gump.
Yep.
Tony Stark in Iron Man 3, also relating to the other stuff we talked about earlier.
Right.
Francine Hughes in The Burning Bed. That was a Farrah Fawcett movie about an abused wife who set a husband on fire in 1984.
I had heard about it.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
I saw it on the TV, but, you know, it was half cut because in the 80s, you know, you didn't put that on TV. And then Charlie Fineman in Rain Over Me, 2007, another one I haven't seen. So do either of you want to jump in on this topic? Because I know, Morris, you've done work on this, so I don't know if you want to add anything.
Definitely with Lieutenant Dan. After that, I mean, because if you saw the Vietnam scene and how jumpy he was and giving directions to Forrest Gump about, you know, smoking cigarettes and using the bathroom, the toilet, and pee pee and everything. And then after the legs, and he swam out, just and then he came back and changed. Like it was, yeah, he was, and then he found out the medal, the Congressional Medal of Honor, I believe he won, and then he was outside waiting for him. I would say that character definitely. Tony Stark, I think he lost a little bit of it when he went up in the first Avengers, trying to save and get that missile that was going to destroy Manhattan or all of New York. That's when his kicked off. That explains more of it, of him having flashbacks and him telling the story to the Hulk in Iron Man 3.
Okay, that's fair. Let me go ahead and jump to Dr. Mathis. Anything else you want to add about the PTSD stable here?
Yeah, there's two other movies that you might want to mention. One, and I don't remember the name of it, where John Lithgow is playing a vet who's basically living in the woods because he can't make it. And Ralph Macchio is playing his son. He goes out trying to find him and reconnect with his dad. And I have no idea what the name of that movie is. I've only seen bits and pieces of it. The other one, which is a really good portrayal, is Legends of the Fall.
Oh, yes. And Brad Pitt's character.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they had mentioned that earlier, and I wasn't sure about it. There wasn't a lot of commentary to go on. But, yes, now that you mention it, I can totally see that. I am familiar with that movie. I did see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go ahead and go on to the next pathology. And this one I'm going to come back to. This is where we have psychopathy, psychosis, sociopathy, antisocial personality disorder. And on the next episode, we'll cover why the names have changed and how we're referring to it. But I'm using terms that you guys know. And I'm going to do this in a big section at the end. So my commentary on that explaining why is that these will be handled below in the largest section, as Hollywood and media seem to have the most fascination with these pathologies. Also, please note that the terms, quote, psychopath and sociopath are not only not interchangeable, but they have been superseded quite a while ago by antisocial personality disorder, or APD, as we've been saying under the show, under which both terms are subsets now and considered inaccurate. But
right.
For purposes of this show, I will use the old terms as they are with what our listeners are familiar. I am having so much tongue-tiedness, and I had somebody drop offline. Mark had to drop offline. He's having computer problems, so we may not have him call in tonight. So let me go ahead and get back to that. I will cover that after I cover this next one. They're in alphabetical order, but I'm pulling that one out for last. So I'm going to skip to the last one on the list, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, schizotypal personality disorder, STPD. And I will, as with the rest of them, explain the terminology on the next episode.
Those are grossly different.
Yes, they're very different things.
Gross.
Do you think they're grossly enough where it's a misnomer to have them under the same category at least? I mean, I sort of think there's a blanket involved.
Well, the thing is, they're all folks who see, if you will, reality very subjectively and inaccurately, but to different degrees and in slightly different ways. They're all what I would say is altered views of reality, but some are like really altered views, like reality.
And the you're other not ones on are, this planet at all.
Yeah, right. And the others are just kind of, in the vernacular of the South, them boys ain't right. But, you know, and I'm being from the South, I can slam it all I want. Thank you very much.
You. As a Virginian, I'll let you.
There you go. All right. Well, there we go.
So here are some characters that kind of come under the big blanket of, you know, breaks in reality in various forms. Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver, 1976, you know, De Niro. And it's also posited that he may have PTSD on top of it.
Uh-huh.
Karen in Through a Glass Darkly from 1961, and a somewhat related movie, James Barris in A Scanner Darkly in 2006. John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, 2001.
Yeah. Yep.
Deborah Blake in I Never Promised You a Rose Garden, 1977. Virginia Cunningham in The Snake Pit, 1948, which is said to be accurate. That's the notes I had. June in Benny and June, J-O-N, and that was 1993, also said to be accurate. Perry in The Fisher King, 1991. Teddy Daniels, also known as Andrew Latus, in Shutter Island, 2010. That was another DiCaprio film. The film was set in 54, so we're judging the behavior by what was known in 54, even though the movie's from 2010. And then Max Cohen in Pie, Faith, and Chaos, 98, who also may have had paranoia. And that last film I'm very familiar with, but it's kind of a cult classic, and nobody's really seen it. It's fabulous. A guy is losing his grip on reality while he's chasing Kabbalah and number mysticism. And he gets involved with the Jewish community in New York and starts to bend reality based on numeric relationships with science and altering the earth, and then it gets really esoteric at the end. It's kind of like The Wall. You shouldn't watch it sober, but I did. And, you know, I haven't really been the same ever since. I may have to come in for a session. So these are the schizophrenia and et cetera characters. I don't know if you're familiar with any of them or if you want to comment on this, but we'll pause here for that.
Yeah, definitely the Deborah Blake character, John Nash, and Travis Bickle, absolutely. Schizophrenic, full-blown. Yeah,
oh, yeah,
absolutely. And Virginia Cunningham, probably. Haven't seen it. It's been
that
so long.
That, I believe, was the Olivia de Havilland's.
It's just been a long time since I've seen that, so I'm sort of hesitant on that. The rest of these I've never seen.
Okay. I have seen Shutter Island, and it is a little bit Fight Club-ish in that the character, you know, this is a spoiler for you guys, but this movie's 7 years old, so get over it. the main character thinks he's in a particular reality, and partway through he breaks this facade and realizes it's a different one altogether, you know, very much like they do in Fight Club. You know, and that's why it was put in there. And then Max Cohen in Pie, Faith, and Chaos also has, he never really gets back and realizes he's in a bad reality. He just gets sucked down the rabbit hole of Kabbalah and mysticism and the power of math and patterns in nature and all that kind of stuff. So if we're done with that one, I'm going to get to the big granddaddy tonight, which is psychopathy, psychosis, psychotics, and sociopathy. And as I mentioned earlier, these terms are a bit outdated, but because it's what you guys are familiar with and what Hollywood's still using, and even psychologists and psychiatrists today are still using those terms. They're not technically correct, but I'm going to use them so you guys don't get lost. So these characters identified as in publicity or assumed to be by pop culture, quote, psychopaths. This is the largest category of character pathologies, partially due to both our societal misuse of terms and our cultural romanticizing of the pathology. Also the largest topic because this topic began as a function of the 2013 Belgian paper that I quoted in the beginning, and that focused specifically on the accuracy of APD portrayals in film. I will indicate how accurate the label of, quote, psychopath is for each character if I have notes, and alternative suggested pathologies, if I found any, you know, if they are not considered accurate, people may have suggested what's a better label. This is a long list, so I'm going to go through them pretty quickly. Dr. Mathis, if you want to make commentary about a particular character, just, you know, signal me and I will hush, and then you can jump in with your commentary.
I can do that at the end. I can do that at the end when you finish this.
Okay. That's fair. Okay. Yeah, you will have a list of your own on your computer, so if you need to go back to somebody, we can do that. Okay, so the first one, Alex DeLarge, Clockwork Orange, 1971. It's considered inaccurate. Diagnosis is APD by DSM-IV standards. They were changed. APD was not codified in 1971 when this movie came out. His diagnosis in the movie is never completed. The movie also misportrays aversion therapy, but I didn't get into that as a pathology because that's more a treatment.
Right.
The next one is Alex Forrest from Fatal Attraction 87, considered inaccurate as a psychopath.
Yep.
Alex is also mistaken for BPD. Now, this is in someone else's opinion. I know you have said that you think it fits.
Oh, I think it's dead on, no pun intended.
Fair enough. Yes, no, absolutely. And there's plenty of room for that. IMDb says that Alex Forrest suffers from an obsessive condition known as de Clairembaux syndrome, a.k.a. erotomania. Erotomania is a type of delusional disorder where the affected person believes that another person is in love with him or her. Erotomanic delusions often occur in patients with schizophrenia and other psychotic disorders, but can also occur during a manic episode in the context of bipolar one.
And a version of that called the splitting is very, very common with borderlines. Very common.
Good to know. Goeth, I don't know how to say that in the German. I guess it's
probably
Goethe.
I don't know.
Goethe. Oh, okay. This was a biopic, Schindler's List, 93. Accuracy is undetermined. He was a renowned Nazi war criminal that did a lot of monstrous things. I was very fuzzy
on
his pathology, but it was suggested that he was a psychopath. Accuracy undetermined. Annie Wilkes from Misery, that was Kathy Bates' character in 1990, is considered inaccurate that she's a psychopath. Her diagnosis, according to somebody online from vocalradio.com, did not name the clinician, but in their opinion, she was Axis 1, schizoaffective disorder, bipolar type, and Axis 2, schizotypal personality disorder. Again, no, I have no idea if these are accurate. We'll talk about that in a hot minute. Anton Chigurh, I don't know how to pronounce that, sorry, C-H-I-G-U-R-H, and that was the main antagonist in No Country for Old Men, 2007. He is considered accurate, diagnosis primary classic idiopathic psychopath. Captain Spaulding, Johnny Lee Johns, Otis Driftwood, and Baby Firefly from The Devil's Rejects, 2005. This is considered partially accurate. Otis is a sociopath and maybe a sadist and a necrophile. They are called psychopaths, but this is debated. The next one, Catherine Trammell, Sharon Stone from Basic Instinct, 92. Considered partially accurate. Various characters in the movie call her a risk addict, a narcissist, and a pathological liar. In Basic Instinct 2, she is called a psychopath with narcissistic personality disorder and has traits of ASPD. Colonel Walter E. Kurtz from Apocalypse Now, that was Marlon Brando's character at the end. That was 79. Probably accurate, could also be PTSD, difficult to say in the context of the Vietnam War, but it was posited that he was a psychopath because some of the outrageous stuff he did. This is the one break that I have from the movies. This is a TV show, but I couldn't really leave it out. Dexter, the Showtime TV series, 2006 to 2013, is considered accurate for a psychopath.
Ding, ding. Yeah, oh, yeah. ASP all the way.
Agreement. And Dr. Mathis agrees. Okay.
Great
show,
John
Logan from the movie Sexy Beast in 2000, and that was, oh, God, I've forgotten his name. It's the guy who played Gandhi, the actor who played Gandhi, Ben something, and I've forgotten. But this
Kingsley.
Is a very un-Gandhi. Yes, Ben Kingsley. He's so awesome because this is like diametrically opposed to Gandhi, and he's magnificent. It's been posited he might be a sociopath. There were very few notes on this, but it's a noteworthy character. Maybe a psychopath, hard to say. The next one is Frank Booth from Blue Velvet, 1986. Debatably accurate. Also possibly a sadist with a Oedipus complex. Possible psychoneurosis, schizophrenia. His maternal history suggests sociopath rather than psychopath because there's abuse and mommy issues going on all over the place. Next one is Gordon Gekko from Wall Street, 1987, probably accurate. He's also got APD and narcissism. Hannibal Lecter, Silence of the Lambs, 91, one of the iconic ones for this. The Belgian researchers who did that paper insist he is not a psychopath, that is inaccurate. Lecter's, quote, unquote, almost superhuman intelligence and cunning are just not typical among anyone, let alone psychopaths. But others disagree strongly, although many are laypersons.
And so does your professional.
Excellent. So these were suggested DSM-IV interpretations of Lecter. That on Axis 1, he had paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh,
Axis 2, he had, well, you know, and we can talk about
no,
that.
I hear
this
you.
Is all going
you.
Into
I
the stereotype
you.
That we're fighting here.
Yeah, I hear you.
Axis 2 was posited schizotypal personality disorder and antisocial personality disorder. Axis 4, incarcerated for life, no social network. And Axis 5, global assessment of functioning. And, you know, we can talk about at the end how accurate these things are. Hans Beckert from the movie M in 1931 is considered accurate, at least for the time. Diagnosis secondary pseudopsychopath, also known as sociopath. Additional diagnosis of psychosis. The next one is a movie called Hard Candy 2005. Hayley Stark is the main character. She's a teenager who basically kidnaps and tortures a pedophile for her own amusement. She's quite sadistic. There was no commentary on her except to posit that she was a psychopath, and I'm not sure about this. The next one is Henry Lee Lucas, Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer, 1991.
Yep.
And I'm spazzing. He was just in Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Michael Rooker. I'm so sorry I forgot you, Michael. Because he was also in Walking Dead. He was Merle, you know, Daryl's brother. I did not realize that he got his big start as Henry. I did not catch that. This movie is considered accurate, and that is primary classic idiopathic psychopath. And I haven't seen it. I've seen clips of it, and I'd be willing to buy into that from the little piece that I saw. The next one is Jason Dean, a.k.a. J.D. from Heathers. This was Christian Slater's character. And this is one of the ones where I was struggling with. This movie is satirical. It's black comedy. So there were implications that he was a narcissist, has BPD and conduct disorder. But being dark comedy, it's hard to really say because it may be exaggerated for the amusement. You know, we'll see.
Yeah.
John Doe, Kevin Spacey from Seven. 1997. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a lot of commentary about it, but there's something going on with him, and I'm fairly certain it falls under this someplace. Let's see, Jordan Belfort, who was a biographical character, also The Wolf of Wall Street from 2013. This is considered an inaccurate portrayal of a psychopath. I don't have any notes suggesting an alternate. Kevin Kachaturian from We Need to Talk About Kevin 2011. Didn't have any rankings on that either. It was a family dealing with somebody who ostensibly was a psychopath. I believe he was a teenager or a young adult in their care. This movie was posited as a better example of BPD than Fatal Attraction, which was the character Mavis in Young Adult 2012, and I have not seen it, so I can't speak to that. But people who are rating Fatal Attraction as BPD thought this was a cleaner example. So I don't know if you've seen it, but I'm putting
not.
That out there. Max Cady from Cape Fear in 1991. Don't have any notes on that either, but yeah, he's definitely out there. Mickey and Mallory Knott from Natural Born Killers, 94. That movie also is, I won't say it's a dark comedy, but it has forms of exaggeration in there, so I'm not sure how accurate that is at times because it's kind of stylized, but they're definitely something. Now, this one was interesting to me. Mr. Blonde from Reservoir Dogs, because he does love his torture porn, in 1992. Norman Bates in Psycho, 1960, considered inaccurate. Bates was inspired in part by Ed Gein. This kind of behavior becomes closely linked to psychopathy, but Gein was more likely psychotic, meaning out of touch with reality. Psychosis, which is a completely different diagnosis from psychopathy, often involves delusions and hallucinations. That was definitely Bates.
Yeah,
so I would
schizophrenia.
Yeah, yeah. So I agree with their comments that Bates was an inaccurate example. Patrick Bateman, American Psycho, 2000.
Yeah. Yeah.
Debatable accuracy, also not a comedy, but it was a satire and it was a social commentary movie. Also, he was a narcissist, and also it depends on how you view the ending. It is posited that a large chunk of this is all a giant hallucination, which changes everything.
Right.
So if he's hallucinating at all, that's a whole different pathology altogether. But the movie leaves it vague on purpose. I have not read the book, so I don't know if it's any clearer. Next one, The Joker from The Dark Knight, specifically Heath Ledger's version, 2008.
Yeah.
It's considered inaccurate that he's more of a sociopath. Now, we can get to the minutiae in a minute. Tommy DeVito from Goodfellas, 1990. The notes on this were scant. I'm not sure if I buy it. I know the movie. I know he was kind of a brutal ass, but I don't know if he was really a psycho. And the last one, Tommy Yudo in Kiss of Death, back in 1947. It was a great example of an early portrayal of a, quote, madman as a psychopath. Udo was noted for his iconic maniacal laugh, which is the stereotypical one that you hear of the madmen around Halloween. He kind of made that a shtick. That was his noted thing. So I'm going to pause here and go back to Dr. Mathis. There's a lot of psychos here. So what do you think? How many are good? Some are crazy.
Okay, so
I'm
going to go back and use the correct term, antisocial personality disorder, because that's going to subsume a lot of this, and that's going to clear up a lot of this, are the sociopaths versus psychopaths. So Alex DeLarge, definitely ASP. The Schindler's List guy, definitely ASP. Haven't seen a bunch of these. I haven't seen it. Dexter, definitely. Frank Booth, definitely, but we also have other things going on. Hannibal Lecter, definitely, ASP. But also other things going on. Henry Lee Lucas, absolutely, but a bunch of other stuff going on, too. Most of these I haven't seen. Max Caddy, for sure. Mickey and Mallory, if you take that for reality, but as you say, it's really exaggeratory. It's hard to know with that one. Norman Bates, definitely not. More schizophrenic. Bateman, again, difficult to know. I would say the Joker, probably so, and PTSD.
Oh, good point, yes. Because he did have a shady background.
That's being kind.
trying to be succinct.
there you go. And Tommy DeVito, yes, absolutely. I have not seen Kiss of Death. I heard that's a really good movie, but I've never seen it.
It's good, and it's interesting because it was one of the first of its kind.
Yeah.
Mental illness was not okay to show in movies unless you were trying to scare people. You know,
right.
So they didn't want to do it seriously.
So if you want to wait to part two to talk about the differentiation between sociopath and psychopath, we can do that. Or if you want me to do a quick e-version of it, I can do it now, whatever. What do you think?
I'll
make
it a Reader's Digest version, and then we will devote the next episode to getting into the nitty-gritty.
Okay. So the basic differentiation is this. If you're a mafia guy or belong to some spiritual / religious cult, quote-unquote, or some gang-type thing, and you do violence that adheres to gang rules or the code of the society under which you belong, but they are against society, but they are completely in sync with the code of the society you belong to, you are a sociopath because you have a socialized code of ethics, if you will, but they're antisocial, but they're socialized within your group. If you're a psychopath, you're a loose cannon. You don't care. You kill, torture, rape, murder, death, murder, death, kill, whatever. Yeah, to quote a line from a very bad, very bad Sylvester Stallone movie, in my personal opinion. So if you're a loose cannon, murder, death, kill, that makes you a psychopath. You don't follow any rules at all. You just kill whenever you feel like it. Ho-hum, I'm bored, let's go. And that's the big difference. And both of those have been subsumed under the category antisocial personality disorder, although a lot of clinicians, particularly in the forensic domain, will use those because when you're doing profiling and you're looking for the person, that's kind of helpful to differentiate between those two motives, if you will, for the acts, so that you can better identify the perpetrator.
Got it. Okay. That makes sense.
So that's the quick version.
Excellent. All righty. So it is after midnight, so we're going to go ahead and wrap up in just a hot minute. I'm going to check in with Dr. Mathis first and see if there's anything else that you want to add about tonight's topic in closing.
No, I'm good. Thank you for doing such an extensive job. That's a lot of work.
You're absolutely welcome. I'm going to check in with Morris Small here. And Morris, is there anything else that you would like to add?
Great job. Thanks for having me on there. You kind of hit everything on the nose because I did have taxi. I was actually going to throw a comedy in there, which was Jim Carrey had something called Me, Myself, and Irene. I don't know if anybody ever saw that.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it, but that was suggested on the list.
Because he built the character up so much that he hid all of his anger, and then he went into that one shop and he just flipped, and he has no recollection when he's the normal cop that the other guy's going on. And definitely, I was going to say Mike Myers for Psychopath, because he kind of killed people for no apparent reason
and no fear.
He just did it. Yeah, Halloween. There we go.
Mm-hmm.
The list is very accurate.
All right.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you all for the commentary, and that concludes the first half of our episode on Pathology Chic and misconceptions in Hollywood and society about various mental health diagnoses. We hope our listeners will have a better understanding of the reality of these conditions, and that perhaps in the future, this accuracy will be reflected better in our entertainment, art, and media. It's nearing the end of our show. So on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, thank you everybody for joining us. Special thanks to Morris Small, and good luck in your acting endeavors in D.C. You're welcome back anytime if you want to visit with us again. Thank you. We will see you guys in 2 weeks for part two of this topic on Wednesday, July 12th at 11 p.m. EDT right here on blogtalkradio.com. Please look for us on Facebook. We're on Twitter and at www.rockandrollshrink.com. Good night, everybody. And rock on.